Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us today as we talk about financial issues. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial planners, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself. Come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And in full disclosure, we're not always here on the weekends. Oftentimes it's pre-recorded during the week. But nonetheless, we broadcast this on the weekends.
So as far as you know, we're here on the weekends. Or on your podcast.
I think we have more listeners via podcast now. So
we do.
We're financial advisors all the time.
Four 24/7. Podcast listeners and two terrestrial.
That's right, including my mother.
We're all in.
And if you want to join us, you have a question for us, some financial, something you're dealing with. Maybe you're wondering if you're able to retire soon or want to be in a position so retirement's a possibility in case you want to do that sometime or trying to figure out how to pay for your mom's care.
Yep, or kids' college, which is, just read another article about the statistics on student loans, and I just shake my head. Shake my head.
How we got to this place. You saw it happen. You watched it.
You could predict it. Which is when the capital flows, we'll talk about it later on the show, but when the capital flows to any asset class,
drives prices up. Supply and demand.
How it works, right? And especially if it's a subsidized asset class, which are home mortgages or subsidized asset classes, right?
Clearly, and college education is.
Yep, and college education.
Well, that's the next bailout. And I'm surprised you're not hearing it from some of the presidential candidates, hopefuls. You know, they got Medicare for All. And,
They have. They've kind of backed off on that, haven't they?
It's free college, but no one's yet said it should all be wiped out.
Yeah.
That'll be...
It's $1 trillion. It's over $1 trillion right now.
But what if you were the kid who just worked your tail off during college to avoid loans and your buddy took out 80,000 in loans?
Scott, you can't talk about moral hazard.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're already getting off on a little tangent maybe that we...
But let's take some calls. If you want to join the show, it's 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-242-6766. And we'll get you on the air.
Yeah, let's start off here in Colorado with Debbie. Debbie, you're with Hanson McLean.
How are you?
We're wonderful. How can we help?
So my husband and I recently married, bringing two families together. We now have 6 adult children and some grandchildren, and obviously more to come. We are looking at our retirement years, planning our portfolio for retirement, and considering our assets when we pass them on down to our adult children. So my question is, wills or trusts? Or should we start gifting our children yearly to minimize tax burdens on our kids? And how do we move forward with our assets, making sure that there's no disputes or probates?
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this. Let's talk about gifting first. Would your estate be north of, between you and your husband, $20 million?
No.
Okay. Well, then you don't really need to gift.
Not for tax purposes. If you want to gift and you can afford it, so in other words, it doesn't impact your lifestyle, then that's something you can choose to do. But from a married couple can pass on about $22 million before there's any estate taxes.
So let's talk about the need for a trust or a will.
Or trusts.
Or multiple trusts in your situation. So we, throughout the year, we do educational workshops. We do actually a lot of them throughout the United States. And we do one called the 7 Personal Decision Points, which is a retirement planning. And one of the things we emphasize we emphasize is that if you have children from a previous marriage, how important a living trust or trust can be. So you asking the question is extremely important, because if it's not done right, you can inadvertently disinherit your own children.
And here's how we've seen it happen. It's not like, well, we've seen people
do it on purpose.
Yeah, I can think of a couple faces in my mind right now of people that are in the process of disinheriting their previous spouse's kids, which I find repulsive, but there we go.
There you go.
But what? Let's say, Debbie, that you and your husband, you list each other as primary beneficiaries on your accounts, and you've got a will that says, oh, everything goes to my spouse, and when we both pass on, then it gets distributed amongst the kids evenly, right? That's a nice, simple way to do it. And let's say you die tomorrow. He gets all the assets, and he thinks, well, of course, I want to make sure Debbie's kids are taken care of. But then a couple years go by, he remarries.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sets up something similar with the new spouse.
Then your assets go to your husband. He remarries, then they could go to...
That's what we've seen happen.
Or we've seen them actually drain the accounts intentionally so that the deceased partner's children get no money.
We've seen someone set up, say, I pass away. I want these assets to remain in place so my spouse can have the benefit of the assets. And then when my spouse passed away, let it go to the kids. And we've seen the spouse, the surviving spouse, say, you know what? I'm not going to bother spending my own money. I'm going to spend my previous spouse's money.
And that
so that way my kids get more.
Yeah.
And we've seen it. I mean,
so one of the you
we've
need
seen
to,
it all.
We've seen it all. Yeah.
Well, we say that, and then we see something new,
that's
and we're like,
right.
"Wow,
new depth." Yeah.
So you need to go and visit with a highly qualified estate planning attorney.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way around it. You can't do this. I guess you could do it with LegalZoom or one of these online, but I would not. I absolutely would not, because you're probably going to want to set up, if you're living in the same home together, you may want to set up what's called a life estate, where one of you actually gets to stay until they pass away, and then the home goes on to whoever's heirs. And it may not be...
We have rights to survivorship. We bought our properties as joint tenants with rights to survivorship. So.
Even more important, right? Yeah. Even more important now, because what happens is... If you are predeceased your husband, that rights of survivorship only goes to him. It doesn't actually go to your children.
Correct.
Right? So you have rights of survivorship. We're not talking about what happens at the first death. We're happening what happens at the second death and how those assets are actually pushed downstream. And if you're like most couples, you didn't bring in exactly the same assets into the marriage, 50-50. Most people that get in a second relationship or to have children from a previous relationship, don't bring in assets 50-50. So you have to go to a highly qualified estate planning attorney. So if you go to an estate planning attorney that says, I can do this for $100 an hour, go get another estate planning attorney. This is going to cost you some money.
A basic trust is usually $2,500, something like this, probably $3,500 to $5,000, my guess.
Yes.
And if it's you have more complicated assets, it's probably more than that. But it's well worth it, because if you have any assets, how old are you, Debbie?
62. Okay. My husband's 65. We have two LLC businesses. We probably have assets, you know, somewhere in the $2 million range.
See, you're perfect. Perfect candidate.
Yeah.
Perfect. In fact, I just went through an estate planning process with my wife, who I've been married for 33 years, that actually sets up an irrevocable trust at the first person's death to not inadvertently disinherit one.
Yeah.
And I've been happily married for 33 years, but I know she's going to get remarried because the first marriage was so dang good. How could she not? She wants a little bit more of that. All right, Debbie.
I considered an irrevocable trust, but that concerned me because you have no control over once you've established the trust.
Well, that's exactly the point. That is exactly the point. So the irrevocable trust, you don't have to set it up until the first person's death.
Yes, it's triggered upon a death.
Right? So you actually can set up the trust today. but it doesn't become irrevocable, or parts of the trust don't become irrevocable until. That's
and my
whole point.
My guess is, and this is quite common, that both you and your husband, like, look, something happens to us. I want to make sure that there's plenty of income for you to continue your life. But then at the end of the time, I want the kids to get the money, right? I mean, that's
that's what.
And you wouldn't want to see him spend it all on some wild living, in the same way he wouldn't want to see you. His kids disinherited.
Yeah.
So you may have very similar objectives. It shouldn't be a very complicated process.
Yeah, but you need to go to a highly qualified trust attorney. So appreciate the call.
Yeah. Good luck to you, Debbie.
Let me ask you real quickly, are you saying that a trust is better than a will?
In most states, I don't, you're in the state of Colorado. I can't speak to that.
Okay.
Well,
but I can tell you this, that even if you have a will, there's probably going to be an irrevocable trust that is set up at the first person's death.
So the amount of planning that goes into it, the nice thing about a trust, it avoids probate, and it's private as opposed to going through the court record. Yeah. So if you're going to go to all that planning, because there's some planning that needs to go into this and some decisions to be made. If you're going to go into that plan, you might as well set the trust up.
Just since you're there.
It's not that complicated.
So.
The attorneys might make this trust sound complicated, but it's not really that complicated.
No.
So appreciate the call, Debbie. And I tell you, another thing, Pat, when you're oftentimes on second marriages, one of the benefits of doing this sort of planning, it can take place of a prenup, right? So gets couples sitting there talking about whose assets are whose.
Okay.
You can set things up on separate property at that time. I've had clients go through that.
But they don't use the word prenup.
Correct.
They use trust, so it sounds
correct.
Much more benign.
Yeah.
But it does the same. Essentially, it can do the same thing.
These are my separate assets, and we agree that these are my separate assets. They're going to remain my separate assets, and that's not uncommon at all to see that happen. So, hey, if you want to be part of Hanson McLean, you got a question for us. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Mike in California. Mike, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Awesome. How you doing, Mike?
Good. So I had a question about 401ks and 401k Roths. I've been contributing to my 401k, my whole life, so I'm maxing that out. And I've got a sizable amount in there. And I'm wondering, I'm 55 now, so I'm wondering at what point in time should I transition that to potentially putting into a 401k Roth, because I have the option of doing a traditional 401k or a 401k Roth. Is there a certain dollar amount?
It's driven by not the amount in your account, although that might be a factor, but it's really driven by what your taxable income is, the state in which you reside,
and what you believe it's going to be 10, 20 years from now when you're retired taking income.
And what it's going to be, not that particular state, but what state you're going to be in when you start taking that income is a big driver on it. So what we have seen in the last year and a half, especially with this, with the tax law change, which they call the SALT, which is the lack of ability to deduct
state
and local taxes.
Which I never heard the term SALT before 2 years ago. Now you read about it all the time.
Yeah, state and local taxes.
Never heard SALT.
So because they've changed the deductibility, the high tax states are actually seeing a net outflow of large earners into low tax states, which was an unintended consequence. So the question you have is, do I use the Roth 401k or not? What's your approximate family income?
Just north of 200.
Yeah, so the challenge is...
And you live in the state of
California. So you're already...
And I'm not moving.
Yeah, you're already at the high end on the estate taxes. And what's your ball... What do you think your retirement income is going to be? If your income now is 200 grand, are you going to have 200 grand of retirement income?
I'm thinking that my retirement savings should be between 1.5 and 2 million.
Okay. So, right now you've got a lot of income coming. You've got more going to taxes. You're maximizing your 401k. Yeah. So your taxable income is going to be less when you're retired, which is quite typical. I mean, you're mid-50s. You're probably at your highest earning point, right?
You're paying down debt. Yep. You're paying down
debt. No debt.
Yeah. Okay, you've already done that then.
Okay.
Did you have kids you got through school and all that?
I have two in college right now.
Okay.
That's what I'm paying for now. That's where my money goes.
All right. So the challenge is, if you when you do the Roth, you are basically stating, I'm willing to pay the taxes now at this high rate,
believing
that it's going to be lower in the future. My that not just all taxes, but Mike's taxes. Marginal tax rate will be lower.
So future. I would not make the Roth contribution.
Well, you're 55, Pat.
Yeah.
And and you contributed to a Roth for a couple years.
Yeah, and then I stopped.
And then you stopped, went back to traditional.
Yeah, and part of it was...
As did I.
Yeah, I don't... You know, when I'm 70 years of age, when I have to start taking this money out, I actually don't know what state I'm going to live in. I don't know that. So I'm going to... You know, not bet on it. What you should do,
and I'm not necessarily convinced that the state of California's tax rates are going to keep going up. I wouldn't be surprised the next time we have some sort of recession in the state looks at it and
moves it down.
And even with the change in the federal government, the federal government saying, look, we're not going to subsidize state income tax anymore. Figure out some other way to get revenues. I wouldn't be surprised if California, some of the high tax states. Figured out some other ways, and the top marginal tax rates, it's possible they could come down in California.
Well, they're talking about that now with soda taxes, water taxes. So are you making a non-deductible IRA contribution into IRAs?
Yes, I'm doing that also too.
And then you're converting those to a Roth IRA?
I am not converting those. Those are just still in a Roth and other accounts outside of my.
So you have some Roth now.
Yes, I do have some Roth. Okay. It's a very small percentage. It's like 1% of my.
I mean, one way to look at it, if you're putting, let's say you're putting 20 grand a year in your 401k, if you do it before taxes, you really got about 13, 14,000 of retirement income because the tax man's going to take a chunk when you pull it out. If you put this 20 grand into a Roth, you've got the full 20 grand. So.
But Scott, let's talk a little bit about the non-deductible IRA contributions. We still have time to do it for last year.
Right? How much do you have in total? Do you have any IRAs that came from a 401k rollover or times when you took a deduction?
I have a 401k rollover that's about $45,000.
Okay. Is that the only IRA you have, IRA, not Roth IRA? Is that the only IRA you have?
I have one other.
And how much is in that?
The wife's okay.
Another 10.
Is your wife have another a? Is your wife work outside of the home?
She does. She's an independent contractor.
Okay, so here's what you could do. The $45,000 rollover IRA, transfer that to your current employer's retirement plan. Okay.
So you're moving it back out of a rollover back into
and
a
I
company.
Would at 45,000 it may be not the perfect options in there, but it's going to be good enough because what it'll allow you to do is make a non-deductible IRA contribution because your income limits exceed the amount where you can do a Roth. So you make a non-deductible IRA contribution and then you immediately convert it to a Roth.
And so that's 65.
You can do that for both yourself and your wife.
Yeah, and so you have the catch-up provision on those. So what's it, $6,500 a year?
Yeah,
and
times two.
Your wife should set up her own Unique or self-employed 401k at her, because you said she's self-employed. I assume she has one now. Is that correct?
No, she does not have one now.
Okay. Assuming they want to save that much more.
Yeah, okay. I'm saving a ton of money, so.
At a minimum, do
yours.
If you transfer this prior to April 15th, which is not a hard process, you can then do a $13,000 contribution for yourself. That's $6,500 for 2019 and $6,500 for 2018. You could do the exact same thing for your wife.
But you need to transfer your wife's into a self-employed 401k, and you can then make contributions to your wife's 401k. And you can actually make a non-deductible IRA contribution, then convert it to a Roth IRA. So we just went through, we just walked you through three different methods of saving more money that get you to the same place as the Roth, a 401k.
Okay. Makes sense.
And if you tracked all of that, good luck. You might want to actually have to go back and listen to those instructions again.
I'm going to, yes. There was a bit there to be.
Yeah. Yeah. But but your wife, if you're saving a ton of money, what's your wife's approximate income?
Hers is roughly about $40,000.
Okay. It's worth doing a self-employed 401k. They're easy. It's just as easy to do as an IRA.
Getting and transfer that in, then she doesn't have any IRAs. Then neither one of your IRAs, and you can It's called the back. You can Google it. Backdoor Roth IRA.
Backdoor Roth IRA.
Backdoor Roth IRA. And it's one of those things where it's not explicitly laid out in the code, but it's all the rules are followed by the letter of the law is being followed. So
and it's not. Yeah, it's actually a real Roth. It's not a life insurance policy or some other garbage.
No. It's
disguised.
No, correct.
Disguised.
Oh my! The unlimited Roth. Yeah, someone did call at some point. Yeah, this life insurance company.
But Scott, I actually. I hear the commercials, and I hear commercials about certain things, financial products, and I Google them often just to find out what the heck they're selling. Because if you can't figure out what they're selling on the commercial, then you know it probably is going to lead.
And so sometimes here's the thing, and we will get back to the calls here, so stick with us. But this is an interesting topic because sometimes people in the insurance industry say, "No, Scott, Pat, you guys don't really understand." You don't understand, and because here's what you don't understand, and they try to show me some illustrations or whatever. Here's the fact. Both Pat and myself started out in this industry working for a life insurance company.
We didn't work there very long.
No, we didn't. And so...
I understand the products.
So I'll never forget, we had a some sort of retreat. I think it was in Park City. It was in Park City. You were there as well,
yeah,
Pat.
Yeah.
And it was a design to... kind of a boondoggle where you can do some business and ski at the same time.
Yeah.
I haven't done many of those over the years, regrettably. but I'll never forget, people were trying to, they were sharing sales ideas. And now I'm a rookie in the industry. I'm maybe a year in the industry or something like that, right? I'm still trying to figure out which way is up. I've got a degree in finance and working towards my certified financial planner, but still kind of green in the industry. And this one guy, I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, I do. You know where I'm going. I know where you're going.
Because what he did is he showed a tax return. It was, I think, sold to some widow. He called this the Big Easy. That's his sales thing was called the Big Easy. And what he would do is take somebody who's got some money in the bank at whatever the interest rate is and show on their taxes, well, let me show you your tax return. See all this income you're having to report here? What we're going to do is we're going to move this to an account that is going to be tax deferred. And when you pass away, it'll be completely tax free. Oh, and by the way, it comes with a free physical.
Was it life insurance?
It was life insurance. There is single premium life insurance policies.
I don't remember all that.
The Big Easy is what he called it.
Yeah.
How do I get off on this? Because the life insurance, because I get so frustrated. It's not that
how it's sold. We probably recommend life insurance more than we don't. We recommend life insurance more than we don't. But we recommend typically term life insurance.
Yeah, so it's not that we're opposed to all insurance products. Matter of fact, if there's someone out there that sells equity index annuities
and you want to debate us,
We would welcome that debate.
We throw this out here often. In fact, we got an email a couple days ago from a listener that actually
recommended
we do this. And I'm thinking, he must not listen to all of our shows because we've thrown this out a couple of times that we would debate.
Why an equity
index annuity? Why they're probably not the best thing for you?
Yeah. So. Pet.
But I, you know, we are big in education. Education, we think that the better educated the consumer is, the clients are, our clients are, the consumer is, the better decision that making, they're going to be much better at making decisions regarding their money.
Yeah. And it's not that we believe everyone wants to be educated to the point where they do it all themselves. But when you're talking about your life savings and some of these big important decisions like, when do you kick Social Security and all these other things?
Required minimum distributions.
It's important for you to have enough knowledge so that you can make wise, informed decisions. And really, that will protect you in large part from some of these other bad actors out there.
Yeah. And so we, along that thinking, we actually do educational workshops on a pretty regular basis. So we have some upcoming workshops on Social Security. And we have these over 2 weeks in March in Sacramento, the San Francisco Bay Area, in Denver. So on the week of March the 12th, we have them in Sacramento, in downtown Sacramento, Auburn, Elk Grove, Roseville, and Rancho Cordova. And these start at 6:45 at night or on the weekends at 11:15. You'll find more about that in Sacramento at HansenMcLean.com. You know, Scott, I was thinking, look at this. Auburn and Elk Grove. Last year, when we did this, we only did them in Sacramento, Roseville, and Ranch Cordova. We've now added Auburn and Elk
Denver,
Grove.
And we've got the same week in Denver.
Yeah, so we have them at the Denver Tech Center, Broomfield, Lakewood, and Highlands Ranch. And that is the week of March the 12th. The week of March the 19th, we have them in the San Francisco Bay Area at Petaluma, in Petaluma, Pleasanton, Fairfield, Santa Rosa, Concord, and San Mateo. And these are Social Security workshops, Social Security.
Yeah, and it's every situation is unique, and we're going to help walk you through all the ins and outs of Social Security and get you thinking about what might makes the most sense for you. All information's at HansenMcLean.com/workshops, and it's the 75-minute presentation is absolutely free, so you're going to want to come. We are out of time. Got to take a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansenMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad to be with you today. And if you want to be part of our program, you've got a question for us. And if you've been a listener for any length of time, you realize that most of the questions have to deal with some sort of retirement planning, primarily because it's the majority of Americans' number one concern financially. I mean, what are you saving for?
Yeah.
The future. And what's the most of the future look like for us? Our older age, when we may or may not be able to work. When we may want to work, we may not want to work.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if you think about retirement planning, what exactly are you doing? Well, you're trying to put a financial plan together to support yourself when you no longer can expend the labor to do so. And if it was if it was 150 years ago, we'd be having actually large families, and we'd live in a rural environment, and we would hope that we'd have enough fertile land and enough children to support us, truly.
Yeah, and most likely we would die. Much of the world still lives that
way. Well, but as the urbanization of the world takes place, the population continues to fall worldwide.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of the urbanization, because people actually store their labor in different methods than they did 100 years ago, which is through financial products.
Well, I mean, if you lived on a farm, you needed kids to help.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're an executive, what's the kid going to do?
Play video games.
Yeah, and ask for more money.
Yeah, those little brats.
But so the point is with this, the whole point with this is not that our objective in helping people is not so you can retire as young as possible and never have to work again. Matter of fact, I often find it kind of interesting when you meet a young person who says, I want to retire at 45.
I don't get it.
I'm like, why don't you find some joy in your labor? Do something you love doing.
Yeah.
And it's not going to feel like work. But roughly half of us are forced into retirement earlier than we'd planned because of some external factor. And we meet with people every week, meet with one of our advisors who has, they plan on working another several years, and suddenly
Either the job goes away.
Well, that is very common. They get some sort of pink slip. The job is eliminated. It's getting moved. Whatever the case may be, they're out of work.
Yeah, it's getting
57 years old. They plan on working another 7 years. Suddenly, they're out of work.
Right. Or health issues for them, their spouse, or a loved one. Not uncommon at all.
Yeah, which is why.
Or stress-related retirements, which is corporations restructure and job responsibilities are.
I had a friend of mine was forced into early retirement because he was doing great in his job, but he was having some heart problems. So his doctor said he got
stress.
It was just his heart wasn't, the heart God gave him wasn't designed for his job, essentially. It was a congenital heart issue he had.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, health issue. He didn't even really realize he had it.
Oh.
I mean, things happen, which is why we're so adamant about making sure that you're prepare for retirement. Whether you plan on retiring soon or not, you need a plan in place, and that's why we're so adamant about it. And the calls, most of the calls that we take are regarding some sort of element of that. And if you want to be part of the program, we'd love to take your call. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to join us. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. We're in Colorado with Teresa. Teresa, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Teresa.
I am in a situation now. I will be turning 60 in the beginning of April. I have a separation of service with my company that will come down on the 15th of April. I have 403B.
When you say separation of service, is this somewhat of an early retirement offer?
Yeah, they're eliminating my position.
Wow.
You're a teacher?
So I'm a nurse.
Okay.
And so I have a pension. And I was going to roll it into my 403B just because as it gains, I would, you know, a bigger amount, like a 5% gain in a small amount isn't as like a 5% in a big amount.
Oh, okay. Got it. So let's talk.
So I have a pension with the company, and I don't know.
So do you have a choice of taking a lump sum or a stream of payments?
I want to take a lump sum.
Well, wait, slow. I wouldn't jump to that fast. I wouldn't.
I'm worried about the company being solid.
So that it's protected by the pension benefit. Fit Guarantee Corporation. So if it is a pension, a qualified pension, it has insurance very similar to the FDIC, which is the PBGC. But so the jumping to that lump sum is a dangerous thing without actually.
It may be the right option.
I don't know, but I wouldn't jump there, right? I wouldn't jump there because you say you're worried. Well, whether that worry is founded or not, I don't know. It may be. It may not. It depends on your age. It depends on the size of the pension. It depends on the guarantees that the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation will provide to you. We could talk about rolling it into the 403B, but you may not. All other things being equal, that may or may not be the right thing to do. And if you want, we'll kind of walk through that thinking and answer your questions along those lines before we tell you how to roll it into an IRA. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. So how much is the monthly pension?
The pension, when I see what is put out in the computer is not, I can take it at 62. I can take it now because I'm fully vested.
Okay, let's go with now. How much is it a month?
And so now it's not much more than in the lump sum, it's about $500,000.
Okay. And how much is the monthly?
Monthly is only like 21.
Okay. And are you married?
No.
Okay. You're single. So single
it's
life.
Just me.
And are you of a, do you believe you have a normal life expectancy?
Yes.
Okay. And what other assets are there outside of this $500,000 or $2,100 a month in pension?
Well, I have like my 403B, that's about $500,000.
Okay.
And I have a home.
And what's
with
the value
about
of that?
$200 in equity.
And what do you owe on it?
$200.
So it's worth $400 and you owe $200.
Correct.
Okay. And any other assets?
Not really.
Okay. And what is your Social Security? Have you done a Social Security calculation and figure out what your Social Security will be?
Yeah, 65 and 3 months, I think.
Yeah. And how much will you receive at 65?
That I'm not sure.
Okay. And how much are you earning at your job now?
I make about $110,000.
And do you plan on going back to work?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take the lump sum. It's because it's about a 5% distribution rate, so the internal hurdle rate's probably around four.
Four.
And
Okay, so that answers that question. So
you shouldn't have called.
No.
I don't know what you mean by the 5% distribution.
Oh, so what happens is we do a calculation. This is why I was so adamant that you have to actually do the numbers. Is we do a calculation, it's called a net present value calculation, to figure out what that $2,100 a month is worth, assuming a rate of return and a normal life expectancy.
And here's why Pat says, don't jump to that. Because if they said, hey, Teresa, we're going to give you a lifetime pension of $2,100 a month, or we're going to give you $10 million. Well, obviously, take the $10 million bucks. But if they said, we're going to give you a lifetime pension of $2,100, or we're going to give you $50,000.
You would take the $2,100.
And so there's a point in the middle there where it starts getting more fuzzy. And now that we've got to look at what's the internal rate of return that we would need to receive to replace that, but then what other factors are going on in life?
And so the calculation we did assumes that if you get somewhere between a 4% and 5% rate of return on your money, that you're better off taking the lump sum than you are the monthly pension. If we had done that calculation and it said you needed to get a 10% rate of return,
take the monthly pension,
then you take the monthly. If you were 100% risk averse, you would take the monthly, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's risk in taking those the lump sum, which is you have the investment risk yourself. You bear that.
Both investment risk and spending risk.
Right, which is you can blow through that money, or you make poor investments based on emotional decisions, based on market conditions. So if you think you're going to raid that money and spend it, or if you think that you can't stick to an investment philosophy over a long period of time, then you're better off taking the pension. Due to the fact that you've got $500,000 in your 403B tells us that you actually have a history of investing on a pretty regular basis. And that you've gone through at least 3 market cycles. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes.
Okay. So that's why you would consider moving
so
it
poor
to...
poor Teresa called with a question. It's been 10 minutes. Teresa, what is your question?
No. So your question was what?
taking the lump, would that be the prudent thing to do? And then since there is a separation of service rolling it over into something, I just pick some. Should I pick where my 403B is and just ask them to roll it, or should I
maybe not?
Investigate a few others and then roll it into them.
So, Teresa, what you really need to do is do a financial plan to see how much money. And how much longer you need to work, including your Social Security benefits, and how much money you need to make.
And how much money might be taken from the plans now.
Now. So you need
don't want to jump right back to work.
You need a financial plan.
First.
And from that financial plan, then you would direct the dollars. The dollars. The 403B is probably not where you want to roll it. If you're over age 59 and a half. There's no restrictions
benefit.
On taking money from an IRA. IRAs have
greater flexibility
than a normal 403B, unless it's a 403B7, but that's a different conversation altogether. So, I look at this situation, you go, okay, she's going to end up with $1 million in an IRA. If she started a 4% distribution, that's $40,000 a year, but you're used to making $110,000 a year.
But she says she's probably going to go back to work.
But she's been making contributions to the 403B and her 401k, so she's probably living on $80,000 or $85,000 a year. And so you need to make up X amount. And that's what a financial plan will do for you.
And then we say, okay, what's the appropriate kind of investments based upon what is the best plan for Teresa?
Yeah. What you just did would be a doctor walking into a patient without a diagnosis and prescribing something.
That's kind of what they do now, isn't it? Let me see here. Sore throat, here's some penicillin. See you later.
Well, I don't think Teresa's going to agree with us.
She's seen that, though. She's a nurse.
In my case, it's like, here's your shot, bend over.
Well, you want to make sure that doesn't happen with a financial advisor. So you need to do a financial plan. And to get a good understanding, if you go to our website, handsomeclain.com, You there's a webinar called the 7 Personal Decision Points, and it will actually walk you through kind of the things to think about. It's a process that we use, but other firms use their own processes. But you need that financial plan. So,
all right.
We thank you for listening. Thanks for the listening.
Yeah, and I know sometimes when retirements, your position's been eliminated. I hope this is a good thing for you. So.
Oh, sure it will be.
I'm sure it will be. It's all what you want to make of it at this point, isn't it? But,
that's right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, in a position where nurses are, it's not like you're in some industry where your skill set is being less utilized. It's still in great demand. So good luck to you, Teresa. And let's continue on. We're in Denver talking with Jeff.
All right. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Really enjoy the program.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I actually have a two-part question for you, if you would. So my wife and I are both over 50, just over 50, and we contribute. We're fortunate enough that we make enough salary. We've got, you know, pretty good financial plan, I believe. But we contribute the max to our 401ks, including the catch-up contribution.
Okay.
And so, secondly, our income is well above the income limits to contribute to a Roth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, fundamentally, we have the ability to save even more money on top of that outside of our employer 401ks. And so what I'm really calling about today is to understand the best strategy for us regarding these savings and investments over and above the employer 401ks.
Are you contributing to a non-deductible IRA and then converting it to a Roth at any point in time? Have you done that?
No.
Well, backup question. Do you have any IRAs right now?
Outside of your 401ks, are there IRAs?
We do. So my wife's got one outside of her. She's got a traditional IRA account that we converted from a previous employer. And then I've got a separate IRA account that I opened.
We were talking about a strategy, which.
Well, we're going to go down that path for a little bit, Jeff. How much money is in your wife's traditional IRA? Not the 401k, just the IRA.
100K.
Approximately. How much?
100,000.
Okay, and then your IRA, how much is in that?
About 10,000.
Okay, so Scott, you want to walk them through this?
Here's one strategy you could employ. We'll throw it out. If you transfer both those retirement accounts to your current 401ks, it would leave you with no IRAs. Once you have no IRAs, you can contribute into what's called a non-deductible IRA. Okay. Once it's in this non-deductible IRA, you can then immediately convert that to a Roth IRA because there's no income limits on Roth conversions. So we can convert it to a Roth IRA. And because you had no other IRAs, there's no – essentially, your cost basis is going to be equal to what you just contributed. So,
and this is why you need to do that is because if you make a non-deductible IRA contribution – to your IRA, and then convert it to a Roth IRA, it's converted on a pro rata basis. So if you go ahead and put $5,000 into your wife's IRA, and then convert $5,000 to a Roth IRA, if you're tracking me here, 95% of that will be a taxable event, and 5% of that conversion will be tax-free. Because of the fact that,
having said that, it may or may not be worth
So here's what I did. So I would look. I would look to see if your wife's 401k and your 401k can actually, if you can roll monies from your IRA into those.
Of course, you
not
can.
All 401ks allow
95. Nah, 95%.
Well, but Scott, not all.
Okay, thank you.
Don't. I hate to talk in absolutes.
All right.
So if I were you, I would look to see if I could roll these IRAs into your company 401k plans and then make the non-deductible IRA contributions and then convert them to a Roth.
And if you
do it now, you could do it for last year and this year. So I did both of my – I do mine.
Every other year, as I do.
Yeah, just so it's easier.
So I'll make two contributions. So this – up until April 15th of 2019, so up until April 15th of this year, you can contribute for 2018 and 2019, and then you can immediately convert those. So you can put about 20 some odd thousand bucks into your. That's one strategy.
Are you tracking? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I am. But the key there is I have to roll
Of those. So if you don't want to do that, and I get that, if you don't feel like doing that, here's a couple of things to look at. And if I were in your situation, actually, I'm about your age, early 50s. I would plan for my home to be paid off at the time I retire. Once I've done everything else, I would set up a just an index fund, either the total stock market, the S&P 500. I would contribute to that on a monthly basis. They're highly tax efficient in the fact that it doesn't spin off much in the way of dividends and capital gains. And the dividends that it does, they're qualified dividends taxed at a lower tax rate. You're going to receive long-term capital gain treatment on it in the future. That's what I would look at doing.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And then.
And I wouldn't hold any, I don't think I'd hold any bonds there. I think it would all be stock. And if I thought I wanted to reduce my stock exposure, I'd reduce it in my retirement account.
So for clarity, so over and above the Roth conversion,
yes,
put the additional money into a just a plain brokerage account and buy a low-cost index fund?
Yeah.
I personally wouldn't use an ETF because an ETF requires a trade each time, whereas a no-load fund does not. And I'd look at, you know, if you have some other assets to kind of jumpstart it just to
And you said the bonus. S&P 500, but I'd buy the total market.
I said both.
Okay.
Or the total stock market.
I'd buy the total
market. I'd buy a total stock market index, one of the big no-load funds.
All right. But I think it's worth actually converting your, at least your wife's
401k. I know you do because you do it each
I
year.
Do it. And actually, you know what I would do? I'm going to tell you, this isn't 100% right.
It's not right.
Well, it's not the most tax efficient, but I'm a little lazy. His IRA that has $10,000 in it, I would just convert that to a Roth and pay the taxes on it just because it's easy.
Would be easy to transfer it to his company's 401k as well.
Yeah, you might be right.
Your wife wouldn't, because your wife's the one who's your accountant in the household.
Well,
takes care
you know
of
what?
Books.
We didn't have a choice because my wife doesn't work outside of the home. We converted hers to a Roth IRA and paid the taxes on it. Okay. Mine, I moved back into the 401k.
And she's precluded from a spousal IRA.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Good luck to you, Jeff.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Thanks, you're going to doing fine. You're in your early 50s. Just kind of planning.
Perfect.
So appreciate it.
Very
much.
Thank you.
There's a lot of rules around this stuff. Isn't there? Do you ever think about it? How much?
Well, this is a backdoor Roth conversion. It's not actually spelled. Of course, the 401k, when it was created, it was not intended to be a retirement planning vehicle. Congress created some legislation. Some guy looked at it and said, wait a minute, I could have an employer-sponsored tax-efficient retirement plan as a result of this. And that's how it was created. And this is the backdoor Roth. They'll probably close this door at one point.
Which wasn't really created. It was for the lack of specificity, became.
That's right. Until there's more legislation banning it. And now we're in California with David. David, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, David.
I have a Social Security question for you guys this morning.
All right.
You sound like you should be hosting a radio program with this voice, doesn't he?
Yeah, a little bit.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway, my wife, who is 63 years old, if she decided to take early Social Security retirement, she would only get about $200 a month. She doesn't have much in earnings in Social Security, and with the discount for early retirement, she'd only get $200 a month. But if she decided to do nothing and wait 3 years, she could collect at half of my Social Security rate, and she would walk away with $1,100 per month. So my question is this. Can she collect on her own account at $200 a month, and then when she reaches full retirement age, switch over and collect at $1,100 per month under my account? Now, I've been told by three different people three different answers.
So she files early, she files at a discounted amount. Let's say it's 83% of her normal benefit. Don't know exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say it's 83% of her benefit. When you start claiming your benefit and if 50% of your benefit is more than her benefit, she'll switch over, but 83% of what she would have been entitled to had she waited until her full retirement age.
So the answer is it may not make sense for her to actually start taking it at age 63. She might want to wait until, assuming she has a normal life expectancy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that any of the answers you've got?
Yes, that was one of the three answers that I had received from professionals. One said you can't switch at all, and she was adamant. You can't switch once you start collecting on your own benefits. You can't switch to your spouse's. which I found incredible.
Always wrong, never in doubt.
I was hoping that you'd say that she could collect her full $200 a month and then $1,100 under mine when she reaches full retirement age, but it looks like it will be discounted when she does collect under my rate.
So my experience, Pat and I have both been advisors since around 1990. We began this firm in 1993. We've encountered thousands of these situations, frankly, and we've seen firsthand. We've watched how somebody's suddenly their Social Security benefit check increases when the spouse starts collecting. So we clearly know that based on experience and based upon what we read in the law, that, in fact, a spouse will have an increased benefit at assuming 50% of their spouse's benefit is higher. And that's always a tricky thing, too, because if they applied early, they start collecting early, it's not really 50% because it's 50% then reduced by that early reduction.
Because they're not full retirement age.
There it is. There's the answer.
So she probably would want to wait.
My guess, if you calculated the numbers, which is what you should do, rather than
multiple ways, yeah.
Is to look at it. But, overall view is you're probably better off waiting until your full retirement age. And then you need to decide whether it makes sense for you to wait until you're age 70 based upon the other incomes and what you're looking to do. In fact, so where are you located?
In Concord.
Okay. There. We have some Social Security workshops coming up. I don't know. I'm looking at the control booth. Do you know when our Social Security workshops are? They're coming up. Anyway.
She nods her head. Yes, she does.
We do. So if you go to our website, and we'll let you.
Second week of March in the Bay Area. When are they?
Okay. Right. So anyway,
we'll put you on hold and we'll tell you when they are. And preaching.
So, that'll be great. Thank you, Jeff.
Hold on just a second. Well, we are just about out of time. I want to remind our listeners, we've got our Social Security workshops coming up the week of March 12th in Sacramento and in Denver. Go to HansomMcLean.com for all information. We'll hope to see you there. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll see you next weekend.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
Scott Hanson here, and I have some exciting news to share, Sacramento. Hanson McLean is changing its name to Allworth Financial. Why? Well, modern retirement has gotten much more complex. I mean, from taxes to estate planning, even the social transition, we decided we needed a name to reflect how we help you plan for all of it. But rest assured, I mean, we're still going to provide advice that's in your best interest, just like we have done for the last 26 years. So to learn more about our name change to Allworth Financial starting April 29th, visit HansomMcLean.com/Allworth.